From the Baltimore Sun, this is Roughly Speaking, and I'm Dan Rodericks. Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to episode 287 for Friday, the 11th day of August, 2017. Brendan Dorr, Baltimore bartender and champion of forgotten cocktails, joins us again. And boy, am I happy about that. Brendan recently brought four bottles of very colorful aperitifs to the studio, and we tasted them and talked about them, and tasted them and talked about them, and tasted them and talked about them, and got a little tongue-tied by the end of the session. We apparently raised the concerns of a Baltimore Sun editor, Richard Martin, who happened to be walking by the studio and wondered what we were doing in here, what we were drinking at 10 o'clock in the morning when we recorded the podcast. It's kind of amusing. But anyway, Brendan really knows his stuff, as anyone who has heard him on the show before can attest. And today, we're going to learn about drinks that whet the appetite. Campari, Aperol, Kina, and Pimm's. So you're going to learn something about those drinks today, and we're going to do that in just a few minutes with Brendan after we get another book review from Paula Gallagher. This time she recommends a book about two Dutch brothers, one a famous artist, the other a renowned art dealer.
This week I have a nonfiction title for you. It's called Vincent and Theo, The Van Gogh Brothers by Deborah Heiligman. The interesting thing about this book is that it's actually published for the young adult slash teen market, but I would recommend it to any adult reader who is interested in art who is interested in just a really rich biography. The book is a result of Heiligman's immersive research, and the centerpiece of her research are the 658 letters that were preserved that Vincent wrote to Theo over the course of their lives, which were remarkably short. And they were much more than your typical brother relationship. They were friends. And Theo was a supporter and a champion and a booster of his brother, no matter what. They had their falling outs. They had their issues. But they were there for each other all the time. And so it's interesting because you think about, what do you know about Vincent van Gogh? And you think of Starry Night and you think of Sunflowers. And then you think, oh, and he was crazy and he cut off his ear and he shot himself. And those things are true. But there's so much more to the man than that. And so she delves into their childhood. And the book is arranged into what she calls galleries. And so you get to see many of his drawings. And he drew as much as he painted. I think some people don't realize that. There are color inserts with, you can actually see his paintings, including one of the paintings that is held here in Baltimore in the Cohn Collection, called A Pair of Boots. You know, having seen a lot of Van Gogh's art, I've always been interested in the backstory. But to be honest with you, so many books are very long, dense, hard to get into. And if you want to dip in and dip out, it's very hard to do that. But this book is really accessible. Heiligman varies the styles of writing that she uses, and she draws the reader in. It's really rich and approachable, fascinating. It introduces us to them as real people with complicated lives and relationships. She includes a timeline so that if you sort of, you know, get kind of confused as to what's what, you can go back and take a look at that, in addition to a list of the people involved in the story, almost like a cast of characters. This book won the Boston Globe Horn Book Award for Children's Nonfiction. It was just released recently. However, it did win this award. I expect it will win many more. Again, that's Vincent and Theo, The Van Gogh Brothers by Deborah Heiligman.
Paula Gallagher is a librarian in the Baltimore County Public Library System. She recommends a book for us once a week, sometimes twice. She'll be back with another recommendation next Friday.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent, locally owned bookseller. The shop offers the best in literature, current affairs, history, poetry, and, of course, books about Baltimore. The Ivy is located at Falls Road at Lake Avenue in Mount Washington. Check us out at theivybookshop.com. The right book is waiting.
Hi, I'm Quinn Kelly, and I host a weekly podcast for the Baltimore Sun called Female Trouble. Each Tuesday, we feature a new long-form conversation with one of the area's most interesting and accomplished women, from public officials and congresswomen to rappers and restaurant owners. You can find Female Trouble on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Find more info at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble.
And on the most recent episode of Female Trouble, Quinn Kelly speaks with Baltimore-based filmmaker Ramon Diaz about her documentaries centered on the Filipino experience. Okay, moving right along, it's time again for a visit with Baltimore bartender Brendan Dorr from the B&O American Brasserie in downtown Baltimore. Today, some really different and interesting drinks for before a meal, what the French call aperitifs. Specifically, why you should try making drinks using Campari, Aperol, Kina, and Pimm's. Today's subject, barkeep, is aperitifs, little drinks before dinner.
Yes, something to awaken the palate.
Yeah. I mean, that's the premise, that's the idea, but you could also sip these after dinner, too. You can use them as digestifs, right?
Absolutely. I think you can enjoy these anytime you really want to. Yes, there are rules and tradition to aperitif versus digestifs. However, you know, this is the modern age. We can do what we want. We can drink it how we want when we want it.
Some people would say, well, I want a cocktail before dinner. That's different.
A little bit. But you also do find that some cocktails, like a traditional martini, could be viewed as an aperitif. You know, it's bright, it's crisp, a little bit of like bitterness to it. So it kind of gets your glands salivating in your mouth. So you're ready to enjoy it.
Is that what
meal.
You like before dinner? Have a traditional cocktail like a martini or Manhattan? Or would you maybe choose an aperitif?
Depends on my mood. However, yes, I one of my favorite things is just a real traditional martini. The martini being gin and vermouth. I like a tiny small dash of orange bitters in it and a twist of lemon peel. I feel olives start to, you get a little bit of that brine in there and it takes over the flavors, those beautiful botanicals.
I was once a dirty martini guy.
All right.
And I cleaned up.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear
it. It was too much. You're correct about that.
Yeah, you're masking the flavor of the alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why that distiller put those botanicals in there. They want you to taste them.
Yes. And, not to be overwhelmed by olive juice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, we make cocktails that have all these other flavors and we mask some of the flavors, but I feel there's a little difference there. I don't know. I'm a purist when it comes to the martini.
No, I think you're right, especially about the gin.
There's only one martini. It's gin and vermouth.
Yeah.
It's like calling a Ford a Ferrari. It's just not the same.
I'm with you on that. Okay, aperitifs, and Brendan has an array here again of colorful drinks. Campari. This is Aperol.
Aperol.
A-P-E-R-O-L.
Mm-hmm.
And a really interesting looking label here from Tempest Fugit Spirits is Kina Lero d'Or, which I think means Kina, the golden airplane, vin aperitif, an aperitif wine,
yep,
and Pimm's. You brought the good old Pimm's with you.
Absolutely. I mean, Pimm's is a classic. It's easy to do. It's different cocktails. People know the Pimm's cup. So should we taste some of these?
Do you want to start with Pimm's?
Yeah, let's start with Pimm's.
Right. We're going to just sip it straight.
Yep. We're going to just, you know, examine it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then see what we think.
I'm not sure I ever drank Pimm's straight.
Yeah, so do you know what Pimm's is made from?
I do not, sir.
So Pimm's was, I believe, created in the early 1800s. It was a mixture of gin, liqueur, and a little bit of fruit and spice. I'm not sure what the exact ingredients are. I've looked it up before, but I've never been able to find anything that says it's these ingredients.
But originally it had gin in it?
Yeah, this Pimm's number one, the one that you see on the market, still has gin in it. They did do variations where they use like brandy and I believe even whiskey. It was like number two and number three.
Oh, but that's Pimm's what the number indicates.
But okay. Pimm's number one stayed around.
Okay, and this is Pimm's number one.
And this is Pimm's number one.
You're not sure about the liqueur?
I'm not sure what the exact ingredients are. As I said,
it's herbal.
Some of these companies like to be very secretive to keep their recipe. Like Drambuie, they will just tell you that it's fruit and spice and scotch whiskey and probably a lot of sugar or liqueur to sweeten it up. But anyway, bon appetit.
Yeah, thank you. Salute. Mm. Oh, I like that. You know, I've never had it straight.
This is a bottled cocktail. Think about what I just told you is in it.
Yeah.
It's a.
I mean, why couldn't you drink that straight?
You can. Just think about that over ice.
Crushed ice.
Yeah, or sure. Crushed ice. Mm. I mean, you could add a little seltzer water to it, soda water, some orange or other citrus fruit to it.
Sure.
Even nice berry fruit could be really lovely. A little bit of mint or other herbs, fresh, you know, herbs from your garden could be lovely in there. You could do a lot of...
On a previous show, did you not describe a sort of Pimm's lemonade?
Well, a Pimm's cup is essentially Pimm's and lemonade.
Is that what that is? Okay.
So if you go down to like New Orleans and you go to the Napoleon House and you get a Pimm's cup, it's like Pimm's and lemonade, basically.
Right. Or wherever in England.
Yep.
That's what you apt to have at a summer party.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I like doing mine with, so still Pimm's, a little bit of like simple syrup and lemon to it. So you're basically creating that lemonade, but then I like adding ginger beer to it. A nice like spear, like long cut piece of cucumber, some slices of...
Yeah, you mentioned that damn cucumber before, I remember.
Yeah, slices of strawberry and mint. And oh man, it's a beautiful looking cocktail and it tastes just as good as it looks.
Wow. I like to go to the B&O. Will you make that for me if I go
will.
To the B&O?
I will. Next time you come in, we'll make you a Pimm's, my version of a Pimm's cup. It's just there to awaken the palate. You see how you're kind of right in the little sides of your tongue, you're starting to salivate a little bit. It's a little bitter, but it makes you kind of salivate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That is the point.
That's the idea of an aperitif.
Aperitif.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
So shall we move on?
Now, this is the interesting one. I've never seen this before. The L'Arrow d'Or, which we think means golden airplane.
So.
Yeah. And it has a golden color, beautiful color.
So
almost like a Madeira wine.
So a cocktail that you would have had that is pretty famous with using quina. So we've all probably, a lot of people have probably seen the new James Bond where he orders the Vesper.
Oh,
he
yeah.
creates the Vesper.
Yeah, yeah.
I forget which title it is. I'm blanking on the title.
Yeah, but it's with Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig orders the Vesper. He says, you know, he kind of concocts it in his head, you know, very matter-of-factly. He uses Lillet. Lillet used to make quina Lillet. So,
and we're sipping quina L'Arrow d'Or.
Exactly. So quina, kind of the homage to King Quinas, the quinine-based liqueurs that you would give to British soldiers. So quinine would help with malaria if they were in...
keep the mosquitoes away.
Exactly. Keep the mosquitoes away.
This is K-I-N-A.
Yeah, Kina. But this is done with cinchona bark, which is another type of bitter. If you get your hands on a bottle of Quina L'Arrow d'Or, try it in a Vesper, and it will change your world.
And again, in a Vesper, would be...
Oh, a Vesper is a few parts gin to just a little bit of vodka and like a bar spoon or like a quarter ounce of this. And he always ordered it shaken. I think he liked his cocktails ready to go real quick. But I suggest stirring it. It's all alcohol. It'll, you know, make that cocktail nice and silken versus a little more velvety from shaking it. And it is actually quite a nice cocktail.
This is a bit viscous, isn't it?
It is. It does have some sugar content to it.
And it's a beautiful color.
Yeah, it's almost amber.
Oh, I love that. Mmm. That's got a little spice to it, and that would be nice with gin and vodka, I think.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Vesper. I'd like to try that.
You could just have this, once again, on the rocks, citrus peel, soda water, tonic. I mean, you could do tonic, and then it'll definitely be a pretty bitter cocktail with tonic, but you could still enjoy it. I mean, everybody's palate's different.
You and I are on the same side on bitters and the herbals, I think. We like those, but I think everybody must like them. To some extent, in these very interesting drinks, what they bring to a mixture, to a cocktail.
What is the nice thing about what is happening in the cocktail world, or what has happened? People like myself have been more and more interested in all these old ingredients for cocktails, and people are producing them, and they're producing them quite well. And so we're able to recreate these cocktails that were lost because... For us in the U.S., Prohibition killed all these ingredients coming into the U.S. So, once again, if you ever think Prohibition is where cocktails created, you're wrong. It was before Prohibition.
Before that.
Yeah.
That's when all the fun took place.
Yeah, you couldn't get your hands on the other things to mix, so there was no cocktails being created in Prohibition. People were just drinking whatever they could get their hands on, which is often pretty bad alcohol.
You know, you've opened my eyes to some of these great old drinks, the digestifs, now aperitifs, and I'm been accruing them at home
and,
and enjoying them. Yeah,
is your liquor cabinet bursting?
It's not bursting, but it's a lot more colorful than it used to be, and a lot more interesting.
That's so fun.
I hope those who listen to us on the podcast get that out of this.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, after dinner, the Kenai I love. It's one of my favorites. What we just tasted. And
what's the cost of that? Because you know what, I haven't found anything that you've mentioned so expensive that I
That one is a little pricier. It is in the $30 to $40 range.
Yeah.
It's a little pricier,
but you get a lot out of it.
You get a lot out of it.
You only need to use a little bit at a time.
It is wine based. I mean, it has enough sugar in there that it's probably fine for quite a long time on the shelf, but it's not eternal. So use it.
Right. Or refrigerate it?
Yeah, refrigerate it. I keep mine in the fridge at home.
Okay.
It is quite delicious. I'll grab it after dinner sometimes and just be like, I don't want anything high proof. Something a little bitter would be nice.
The most colorful bottle here in this group is the Aperol next to the Campari. Actually, it's a little brighter in color than the Campari. But tell us about Aperol.
So
this is A-P-E-R-O-L, folks.
Mm-hmm. So Aperol, also a aperitif, very bright, but still very bitter. Also made with cinchona, bitter orange. But what made Aperol kind of more known is the spritz. So the cocktail, the spritz, then kind of became known as the Aperol spritz because people did it mostly with Aperol. So
you mean they did it with, what, ginger ale or soda?
Prosecco.
Oh, Prosecco. Nice spritzer.
Yeah. So
that's upscale from what I was thinking. Sorry.
Yeah, that's quite all right. So this cocktail is...
Ooh, that must be interesting.
A few parts of Prosecco.
Yeah.
2 parts of Aperol. A couple ounces of Aperol to like 3 ounces of Prosecco. And then 1 ounce of soda water. And you do it in a wine glass with a little bit of ice in it and an orange peel.
That sounds great. And that sounds really good because I love Prosecco.
A great brunch cocktail.
Yeah.
You know, a great pre-dinner cocktail if you're looking for something light, but fairly refreshing.
A little bit of ice.
Yeah.
Not too much ice.
People often wonder if Aperol and Campari can be interchangeable. In some applications, sort of, but it'll always be different. Aperol is a bit lower proof than Campari. I think it's about half the proof of Campari. And
well, in that case, I'll have a little more.
Double your intake, yeah. And Aperol isn't quite as bitter as Campari. So
let's
taste it.
All right.
Nice, like orangey on the nose.
Absolutely is.
Mm-hmm.
That is wonderful. I really like that. It's a bit lighter than I expected.
Yeah.
Mmm. That's good, Brendan.
It is delicious, isn't it?
It's actually a little,
it's interesting doing it in this lineup because it's, I have to admit, I've never sat down and put these all together.
Yeah.
Like this. I mean, I've tasted Aperol and Campari side by side. I was trying to go sweeter to bitter, more bitter. And actually, that is has the most sugar out of all of them so far. And I was surprised.
It's the sweetest one. It's going to be sweeter than the Campari, which I have sipped before. So.
But what's funny is Campari and Aperol have about the same sugar content.
Huh.
From what I've learned.
Okay. Well.
Time for Campari.
Shows you how taste can deceive what you think is going on in your palate there in terms of sugar. Yeah.
So Campari production, kind of similar to Aperol. Mm-hmm. I mean, still some bitter citrus note, spice.
Yeah. Mm.
Some.
You know, for a long time, I used to order Campari and soda, Campari and soda, Campari and soda.
I love Campari and soda.
I know, but it's all I ever did. And now I'm discovering Campari and other drinks, mostly through you.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting thing to add to drinks.
It is.
Yeah. Jeez, a lot more herbal than the Aperol, isn't it?
And a fun fact is, do you know what they used to make the color from?
No.
The color used to be made from a beetle.
No.
They got the color from by putting a certain beetle into it.
Like the skin of a beetle? Or
yeah.
The whole beetle.
Maybe the whole beetle.
And that colored the Campari.
The color of the Campari. Wow. Used to be from a beetle. I can't think of the name of the beetle right now.
My goodness.
It's not coming to me. But
I wonder how they do it now. I wonder if they do it in a natural way, because a beetle is pretty natural.
It is. Hey, it doesn't bother me. It would bother some people, think about that, but it doesn't
As long as
me.
The beetle isn't in the bottle.
Hopefully they filter him out.
Mm. Campari is nice, isn't it?
It is. Campari is...
Of this group, that's the smoothest one I found.
Campari is one of my all-time favorites. It just has such a nice balance of sweet and bitter.
It's like it's bitter, but it doesn't mean it. It's a gentle bitter. In fact, the bottle says bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Campari, Davide Campari, Milano, product of Italy, bitter. But it's a gentle bitter.
It is a gentle bitter.
Now, you brought some vermouth with you.
Sweet, so I brought a little vermouth. Bit of sweet vermouth.
And what are you going to do with that?
We're going to enjoy one of my favorite pre-dinner aperitif cocktails called an Americano. So the Americano was, let's just say, all the rage in, around the turn of the century, going into the 20th century. Count Negroni came to the U.S., and what was a very popular ingredient then for cocktails? Gin. And he developed a big desire to enjoy gin. So he comes back, and he goes to his local bar and says that he wants an Americano, which is Campari, sweet vermouth, and soda. But he doesn't want the soda. He wants gin in it instead.
And thus the Negroni.
And hence the creation of the Negroni.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Signora Negroni, because that's a wonderful drink. But the Americano, now, I think I've had this once before, a long time ago. I remember the term. I'm not sure I knew what was in it. Mm-hmm. One of our editors just walked by the studio, and he's smiling in here because he sees all the bottles. And this is Richard Martin. Come on in, Richard. Yeah. Yeah, come on in. Yeah, he's pointing to the watch, saying it's only 10:30 a.m. that we're recording this.
No,
hello, Richard.
Alcohol.
Yeah, we're just sipping aperitif, sir. So, Brendan Dorr.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So, you want to sip one?
No, thanks.
No, it's too early.
This is educational. Yeah. We are learning. We are not drinking.
Yeah, we're learning about aperitifs. Yeah, and this is an Americano, which Brendan just mixed. It's a Campari,
sweet vermouth,
and club soda,
and soda water.
Mm. So, want to taste that?
Would you like to take one?
You sure you don't want to taste it, Richard?
Enjoy. I will leave it to you to do the
the hard work.
To do the important work.
All right. Yeah, I'm doing this. Yes, I'm doing this in the course of my duty here at the Sun. Well, okay, let's try it. Salute.
Salute.
Chin chin.
Cheers, you guys.
Oh, that's fun.
So
this is fun. This is a fun drink with the club soda in it. Let me. Oh, you put a lemon slice too.
Orange. Oops. It's an orange.
I'm sorry. That's orange.
Yep.
I didn't say that. Let me see what I think about this. It's a nice summer drink, isn't it?
I had one last night. So often you will hear people say when you order this, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have an espresso machine, because you know what an Americano
Cafe
is.
Cafe Americano, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And and I'm like, well, I do like Americanos that way as well, but the
Starbucks has done that.
Yeah, exactly. The Americano is a cocktail.
It's refreshing. It's very nice. That's better than a Campari and soda.
Yeah, I mean,
that's more interesting than a Campari.
You definitely pick
and soda.
Up on the sweet vermouth, that kind of wine and botanical that you pick up from vermouth in general. Kind of calms down the bitter of the Campari. Even though I do think Campari is pretty lovely by itself, but
that's a nice touch with the orange too.
Yeah, I mean, you could press that in a little bit and move it around and squeeze that orange in. And
Brendan, another aperitif that I've had. I've seen others from the French side of my family, French in-laws, is Pernod.
Yes.
P-E-R-N-O-D, which is a very interesting drink. I think it comes in a green bottle,
mm-hmm.
and it pours out. I'm not sure what color it is when you pour it out.
Kind of yellow.
It's kind of yellow?
It's kind of got a like a vibrant yellow to it.
Okay.
Almost hint of neon.
You really need to like anise. Or licorice.
Everybody goes licorice. I hate saying licorice, but
it's
anise.
It's the easiest way to say
anise.
It. But it's anise. And it's, you know, I've seen it done mixed with water on ice, on the rocks.
And you get that little bit of a luge to it, just the oils in it.
Yeah.
It goes cloudy, which is called the luge.
But you don't want a big glass of that.
No.
You want a small glass of that.
Yeah. Well, I had said I thought I had some pastis at my house, but I didn't.
That's another nice aperitif, right?
Yes. Similar to Pernod. And all of those creations are a result of absinthe becoming not available.
During Prohibition?
I think even over in France that people wanted absinthe, but then they made absinthe illegal because they saw people cutting their ears off, which was really a result of drinking a very high-proof spirit, not so much the wormwood.
So they needed a replacement
for that. Needed a replacement.
And went to anise.
They went to anise and kind of did the same flavoring, but no wormwood and and made it a little sweeter.
That's such a very distinct flavor that you need to have a palate for that. You need to have a
you need to be
someone who likes that flavor.
I like it.
It's I like it in small doses. Yeah.
There are very few flavors
you don't
that
like.
I don't like, to be honest. I think I'm well suited for this industry.
Well, this has been fun. And some more ideas here from Brendan Dorr. You can find him at the B&O.
The B&O American Brasserie.
The B&O American Brasserie at Baltimore Street and Charles Street.
Indeed.
And you said you'd make me one of those PIMS cups.
I will make
cups.
You one of those PIMS cups. Okay. Anybody who wants to come in, I'll make them one of those lovely PIMS cups.
All right. We'll see you there.
I will be there.
Thank you, Brendan.
Thank you, Dan.
You can find bartender Brendan Dorr at the B&O American Brasserie at Baltimore and Charles Streets in the heart of downtown Baltimore. He joins us here on the podcast once a month to talk about the art of mixology. And that's our show for now. We welcome comments about it on Facebook or Twitter, or just drop me a line at drodricks@baltsun.com. For producer Steve Early, Dan Rodericks, thanking you for listening to Roughly Speaking, and have a great weekend.
Salute.
Salute.
Chin chin.